Welcome to the Weekly Movie Rundown for the week of July 1st. Yes, summer's rolling along. It's midsummer. We've got barbecues. We've got hot dogs. We've got, well, it's the week of the 4th of July. We've got patriotism. That's right. This week is 4th of July, and we've got fireworks, and we got fun. We got a few movies this week that are coming out. One of them, The Known Unknown, which is a Donald Rumsfeld story, kind of ties into the political angle, and we have some other fun stuff that's coming out. So in just a couple minutes, we'll get right into it. This also is going to cover the movies that are coming out in theaters this week. So we have a pretty a full lineup. Let's get right into it.
Let me put up this next memo.
You want me to read this?
Yes, please.
All generalizations are false, including this one. There it is.
Rumsfeld survived Watergate with reputation intact.
Possible vice presidential running mate with President Ford.
Questions about Rumsfeld are whether he's too ambitious playing second fiddle to Reagan.
The credit belongs to people who are carped at and criticized and said, oh my goodness, you're warmongers. And we need to understand how we got to where we are. Who do we want to provide leadership in the world? Somebody else?
When Shakespeare wrote history, the motivating force was character defects, jealousies, etc., etc., etc. Maybe Shakespeare got it wrong.
Maybe he had it right. Governor Reagan decided to have George Bush to be vice president.
It seems to me that if that decision had gone a slightly different way, you would have been future president of the United States.
That's possible.
How do you think that they got away with 9/11? It seems amazing in retrospect.
Everything seems amazing in retrospect.
Stuff happens. Free people are free to make mistakes and commit crimes and do bad things. They're also free to live their lives and do wonderful things.
And you have to pick and choose. Well, to the extent you pick and choose and you're wrong, the penalty can be enormous. Subject, unknown knowns. That is to say, things that you think you know, that it turns out you did not.
So clearly, Donald Rumsfeld here is looking to rewrite his own history, or perhaps a perception, but there, you know, This gentleman went back quite a ways in history and touched upon a lot of administrations. And even in the trailer, I thought it was fascinating to think of the reality of the fact that it had Reagan chosen him as his running mate, the extreme likelihood that he would have been president after Ronald Reagan. But that what that really points to is, anybody that had been his running mate would have likely been the next president of the United States. So this seems like a good story to maybe watch. It is going to be Rumsfeld's version of it. I don't know that he got complete autonomy on this, though. I think I read some stuff where the director may not have had the same slant. In fact, I think that the director was quoted as saying he did not like Rumsfeld after doing this movie. So I don't know, for what that's worth, that might be one to go watch just to see maybe what sort of bend was put on it.
It's interesting, though, because there are people who think, I mean, here's a guy who, met Eisenhower as a congressman, right?
I was running for Congress, exactly.
And you know, worked for Ford and Nixon and Reagan and both Bushes. And there's still those people out there that think, you know, Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney are actually lizards. Who, I mean, literally, there's people that think they're lizards from outer space.
Yeah, that's true.
Who eat human flesh. I don't know if anybody's ever asked you directly, sir, but are you a lizard?
I don't think he's a lizard. Actually,
can you just please give that a straight answer? Are you a lizard person?
Louis a little left-leaning,
no,
sir.
No, I'm not. Let him answer. Are you a lizard?
Here's the short answer. Yeah. I'm in New York City. I walk down the street, people walk up, shake hands, stop me, they want an autograph.
He's a lizard.
I'd be terribly remiss if I didn't include that last little excerpt, which is actually from the Opie and Anthony show. They had Louis C.K. in, and he did about 20 minutes where he repeatedly insinuated that Donald Rumsfeld is, in fact, a lizard. It was quite interesting and sort of very funny. He never actually answers whether or not he's a lizard, and I have a strong suspicion he doesn't address it in the known unknown. At any rate, you can get this movie on DVD this week. The next movie I'm going to tell you about is one that I'm completely fascinated about now, not so much because of the story itself, but because of the story behind the story to some extent. The movie I'm talking about is called The Lunchbox, and this is actually a subtitled movie. It is Indian-based. It's the story takes place in Mumbai. Essentially, there is a mistaken delivery in Mumbai's famously efficient lunchbox delivery system connects a young housewife to an old man in the dusk of his life as they build a fantasy world together through notes in the lunchbox. Gradually, this fantasy threatens to overwhelm their reality. This is kind of like, you know, this is strange to me on so many different levels. I didn't know this existed, first off, and so the first thing I had to do was go do some background stuff via the good old Wikipedia to find out about this Mumbai delivery system. You know, it's... there's the word dabawala, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly or even close to correctly, but essentially this is a person in India that goes and delivers lunchboxes from home to presumably male spouses in the workplace on a daily basis. And this is an actual service that exists and has existed since the 1890s. You know, so you get your lunch prepared by your wife mid-morning, and you pay somebody, you know, a very relatively small fee, and they take these your lunches by bike and take them to your spouse at work. It's fascinating because it underscores a great many differences in society, obviously, because you have to be close enough to be able to bike to get your stuff to your spouse. So it indicates that a lot of people work very close to home. I, for one, have probably spent most of my life at least 30 miles away, and that would be a hell of a bike ride. But that being said, this story obviously is the backdrop for a story that is essentially a woman who has a husband that pays no attention to her. And this normally incredibly efficient system of lunch delivery somehow gets mixed up, and he gets the wrong lunch, and there was a note in it, and then the note proceeds to take on a life of its own, and apparently, I guess she starts creating two lunches. I'm not exactly sure how that you know, the actual thing works out, but you know, this is like a very slow form of, I don't know, Skype or something online. I mean, couldn't they just get a couple of, you know, phones and text each other or something? I don't know. So it's a very cute way to do something that we're all kind of, I guess everybody's kind of familiar with in essence of that type of building a fantasy world in this case, people needing more than they're getting where they are and all that stuff. And so I guess there's probably a really fascinating story behind it. But to me, I just keyed on, hey, I could get my lunch delivered to me. I mean, that's kind of cool. Because then that's one of the biggest things is you got to think about where you're going to go to lunch. And, Fortunately, I work in a big city in Philadelphia, so I can have a lot of choices. But I remember in days when I didn't have so many choices, that was pretty rotten. One thing I did think was funny, and this will be the last thing I put in here about this particular movie, was they said one of the reasons why they choose to do this is that they think, you know, obviously the food and stuff is cleaner. But I don't know if I would completely feel that way if I knew that my stuff that I just made was going to be slapped on some kid's bike and he was going to run it through all the back alleys in the street to get there faster. I don't know if that takes away from it just slightly, but, you know, I guess it's going to keep it closed and it's all good and you got your healthy food and whatever you want. I do like Indian food, so that wouldn't mind having that delivered to me on a daily basis personally. Anyway, that one is now out. It's on DVD this week, and it would be one I'd be interested in seeing. Okay, the final movie I'm going to talk to you about this week, because this is really it for the week, for the most part, is a movie called Afflicted. This is it's one that I'm on the fence about a little bit. I'll give you the synopsis. Best friends Derek and Cliff set out on a trip of a lifetime. Their plan to travel to the ends of the earth, see the world, and live life to the fullest. But the trip soon takes a dark and bloody turn. Just days in, one of the men shows signs of a mysterious affliction which gradually takes over his entire body and being. Now, thousands of miles from home in a foreign land, they must race to uncover the source before it consumes him completely. Footage meant to be travel memories may now become evidence of one of the most shocking discoveries ever captured on film. So it is a horror story. And the thing I think I dislike about it, which maybe was, you know, obviously there's probably reasons behind doing that, is that it's done on, like, you know, we're recording something and it's all going to be shot from, you know, first person little video camera perspective, which I would think probably lends itself to being able you know, being less costly, you know, when you build that into the concept of the movie. I don't like those types of things, you know, where it's a first person shaky cam crap. Didn't seem like it was horrible shaky cam, but there was some of it, some of the tricks that they use in that realm are in there. Does look like they did a good job with the special effects that they did. They looked pretty good. There's some good scenes of this guy, you know, having some transformations, etc., in the clip. So it's not one I'm going to object to completely. You know, it's found footage though. You know, so it's. You know, so there's some of that in there, but I don't know. It didn't. It got kind of a lukewarm Metascore out there, and well, you know, it's there, and there's not a lot to look at this week. So if you're into horror, this is not a bad one. You know, this is actually pretty decent as far as those go, in terms of production value, even though it's found footage. So maybe go give it a try.
Let's move on to a movie now that's one of the most brilliant, weird, and unusual American documentary films I've seen in a long time.
Roger Ebert was the definitive mainstream film critic in American cinema.
He has been writing for half of the history of feature films.
Roger was a mature writer early on.
He's written over a dozen books.
He wrote a novel.
He won a Pulitzer Prize.
How on earth did Roger Ebert write Beyond the Valley of the Dolls?
Boobs. Beyond the Valley. You know, this is a title.
Roger was a good addition, but he also could take it.
He is a nice guy, but he's not that nice.
It's Thriller Week on Siskel and Ebert in the Movies, and we've got three new ones.
Sound a little excited, Gene.
Sound less excited, Roger.
Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel were the most powerful critics of all time.
The perfect matching of opposites.
Even though Roger wrote Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, Gene lived the life.
These were towering figures clashing.
It was, I'm going to crush you.
You give Benji the Hunter a positive review.
That's totally unfair because you realize
they almost didn't care what anyone else thought as long as they could try to persuade the other.
This morning I confess that I am a sick person. 3 years ago, I felt a lump under my chin, and it turned out to be cancer.
Roger had an inner core made of steel.
You want to rest a little bit or work a little bit?
Ask Steve. He's the director.
He is a soldier of cinema who cannot even speak anymore, and he plows on, and that touches my heart very deeply.
As a film critic, he was somebody who gave life to new voices, gave life to new visions that reflected all the diversity of this nation.
He made it possible for a bigger audience, a wider audience, to appreciate cinema as an art form, because he really loved films.
For me, the movies are like a machine that generates empathy. It lets you understand hopes, aspirations, dreams, and fears. It helps us to identify with the people who are sharing this journey with us.
So obviously, that is the story of Roger Ebert, life itself. It is coming out this week. And Roger Ebert, you know, obviously, I think he's a very interesting individual. You know, him and Siskel, they were two people that, you know, epitomized what movie criticism really meant to me as a young person. I don't know if I always agreed with them, but I like guys that's got their own sort of slant on things. And there was an article that came out of his top movies, and there were some interesting movies that he had on that list for certain years that went against the mainstream to some extent. You know, what's some of the funny things that, you know, about this man? I mean, he had his right thumb trademarked, and I'm assuming that's because of the thumbs up, thumbs down type of thing. You know, and he began his life as a sports writer at age 15, and he tried to get into the Vietnam War and almost got in, but was told he was overweight and rejected, and he was only 26 years old, and he weighed 206 pounds at that time. You know, this is just an interesting guy, you know, and, you know, to kind of get an idea of what he thought. He thought Goodfellas was the best movie that was ever made. He was definitely a legend among of legends. And it's just, you know, he was working right up until the end. And he had the cancer on his jaw. And you know, it's kind of sad to see that he and both Siskel left. You know, they both got cancer. I think Siskel had a brain tumor. I wonder if it was all that movie watching in those theaters. And, you know, you kind of wonder what was it? Was it an environmental thing that went on with those two fellows? But he's missed. And I actually want to see this because I enjoyed the things that he used to say. Okay, so that last movie was one that's in a limited release coming out on July 4th, Life Itself. This next movie I'm talking to you about is called Earth to Echo. This comes out on July 2nd because a lot of movies for the holiday weekend get a much earlier start. Earth to Echo is essentially a modern, to me, based upon the trailer, a little bit of a modern-day E.T. type story. Some kids find something, you know, via their phone, something goes wacky on their phones, and they discover this little thing that, well, maybe you would call it a cross between maybe Short Circuit and E.T., because this little being has some amazing powers, and he's trying to get home, and there's a whole, you know, whole bunch of stuff that you can get. It's a nice little kids movie. It got mixed reviews in the theater. But it is opening this week, and, you know, it's got a nice long weekend, and I imagine it'd be a good one that would be friendly enough to take the kids to. Next up is the comedy starring Melissa McCarthy, Tammy. Also features Susan Sarandon and Dan Aykroyd and a host of other people. Kathy Bates included. So essentially, Tammy has a bad day. She totals her car. She gets fired from a job. She finds her husband cheating on her when she gets home, and she sort of breaks. She breaks out of this this world and takes her boom box out and goes and runs off with her only option, her grandmother, who's played by Susan Sarandon. Looks like, you know, if you look at the the trailer, they rob a bank, and you can already tell they're trying to give the money back. So you can almost see the entire arc of this movie in it. Not that I think that that really matters, because all of that would be mostly predictable out of it before you get into it. It's, you know, it's got some comedy a la, you know, a Melissa McCarthy type comedy. Various elements where they make fun of her being heavy in various ways, trying to jump over a counter in a fast food joint, her pretending that she's running away from the cops to very poor effect. But I'm not giving you anything that the trailer doesn't give you in the 2 minutes, and I think that it encompasses all that you're going to get from it. If you want some sort of a mindless sort of fun activity, this is opening, this opened on July 2nd to wide release in the United States, and to some extent will probably do fairly well at that. So the final movie in a wide release is Deliver Us From Evil. This stars the main character here is Eric Bana, and he's got Edgar Ramirez. Basically, it's when a New York police officer, Ralph Sarchi, who's played by Eric Bana, begins to investigate a series of disturbing and inexplicable crimes. He joins forces with an unconventional priest, Edgar Ramirez, schooled in the rituals of exorcism to combat the frightening and demonic possessions that are terrorizing their city. So this is another horror movie that's coming out. It got, at best, mixed reviews, but that's fairly common for most horror flicks. I will say, for my own liking, I am not tremendously fond of exorcism-type movies. They're all almost virtually the same to some extent. They use the same techniques and etc. However, you know, it looks like it was pretty well shot. It's going to have some of those... you know, if you're into that style of horror, then they've done it well. And obviously, with Eric Bana and Edgar Ramirez, they've got a budget, and it's going to have some good effects at the very least. I think the story will be you know, just another exorcism story. I'd love to see some more original stuff in the world of original, well done stuff in the world of horror. This one, I think it's just going to be another also-ran, but if you like it, I'd say go for it. And with that, folks, we're coming up to the close of another weekly movie rundown. You know, this is a time of patriotism, and you should get out there and have a barbecue and enjoy your freedom as an American. You can catch this podcast on iTunes, on Spreaker, on Stitcher. And you can hear it live, sort of live, on the second unit on Mixlr, as well as the second unit on SoundCloud. For this week, we're signing out.